Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Well, a lot of times during the school year, I like to do these long-form interviews on our WRMJ Sportsline program, but it's hard to get John Nelson, the Rockridge softball coach, in here because he coaches ASA softball in the off-season. And then, of course, during the high school softball season, most games are played on Saturday. So thank you for coming to Aledo to do this long-form, reflecting on this past season, another great year leading the Rockridge Rocket program, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's my pleasure being here. It was a nice drive here. Saw lots of wildlife. You know, I'm a big deer hunter, so got to see some deer on the way. And, shoot, I even picked up a dead chupacabra on the road and threw it in the back of the truck.
Yeah, so do you hunt out Mercer County Way or Little Rock
County? No, I hunt in Illinois City and then in Milan.
Now, is that through your connections with Rockridge Softball that you got some hunting ground out there? The Carroll got some secret hunting spots out there?
No, I didn't get hooked up when I came there. This is a pre-existing hunting spot.
All right, so let's back up a little bit here, and I always like to talk and learn, you know, kind of the backstory of people that I deal with. We kind of have a connection. I'm an Alleman grad, 1985. You're an Alleman grad, 1989. Now, you grew up in Silvis, right? And
yep.
I grew up in Hampton, and I think our fathers know one another.
Absolutely.
Through, I think, the Catholic Church. Yeah. Is your dad at Our Lady of Guadalupe?
Yeah,
or St. Mary's?
Still, yeah.
Okay. So I guess let's talk family first, a little bit about me. And I've talked to your dad several times at different games. A little bit about that relationship and how important that is to you and him staying involved. Because when I see him, he has Rock Ridge stuff on, which is tough for Alleman people probably, too.
Yes, it is. It's a little different to see him in some Rock Ridge stuff. But he supported me wherever I've gone. I mean, he was he's just like everybody, he's your first coach. And so he kind of, you know, taught you what to do and what not to do. You know, when I played baseball at Alleman, he was at every game. And, you know, same thing with anything I've done, you know, whether it's, you know, my band, he'll show up at shows, and shoot, we've even got him on stage before. You know, he's a ton of fun, and he's the city clerk in the city of Silva, so he doesn't get away as much now. But he makes sure he's at the playoff games, and that's where we see him most. We may see him at a handful of games during the season, but man, playoff games, he gets fired up. He can't wait.
Yeah. So a baseball kid growing up, how does that translate then to your success and your interest in coaching softball? I guess where did that come from?
Well, baseball is my first love. I love watching baseball, but playing it. You know, growing up back then, it wasn't the digital age, so it was, hey, meet us down at the Triangle Field downtown Silvis every day at 9 o'clock, and we played for hours. You know, you just wouldn't come home. It's playing baseball all day.
So that's the field off the bypass, right?
Yeah. Right behind the Triangle.
Yeah.
So we would go there or Shad Park when we got a little bit older, because that's got the coolest backdrop. That's one of the coolest parks around. And we played there. And if we weren't playing there, I was at the Rockwell's house, Steve Rockwell's house. And we had the Watsons over and you name it, any kid we could get. And it was wiffle ball, and it was baseball all day. When I got to high school, I learned that I am not good. I am terrible. I may have given up more home runs in one inning to Rock Island than anybody in the history of the game. And, you know, when you're a player, you don't have a ton of talent, you learn. And that's where I thought, you know, I started learning more, and, you know, you try to compensate for what you don't have. I didn't have talent whatsoever, and I figured that out, but I wanted to at least have that mental edge and have the knowledge of the game. I just started dating my wife as a senior at Alleman, and her family, her foster family, they were big into fast pitch softball, and one of her sisters is in the Hall of Fame at UT for softball. And I learned a lot from her foster father, Tim Cumberworth. He taught me a ton about fast pitch softball. And then when you have daughters, you end up coaching and you develop your skill there.
So when you talk about your playing days, I think about, well, you must have had, as they say, a spring training ERA. Unfortunately, it's in the regular season.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think I had one really good varsity game. My senior year, I think I had a one hitter into the fifth inning against Moline, and I ended up getting taken out, and we ended up losing that game. But other than that, yeah, it was pretty much, if John Nelson's pitching, it's Chuck and Duck.
All right, so So what do you remember the first time you were like a head coach? Was it like a youth team?
Yeah. Yeah, East Moline youth baseball. I was out there, and that's when Northeast Park was looking really good. And
did you know then? I guess like when you coach your first game that. Man, this is something I wanted to do.
Heck yeah, absolutely. I was fired up when my oldest daughter Alex started playing. I mean, it was on. Let's do this. And you know, I coached the all-star teams for 4 or 5 years, and my oldest daughter ended up not really developing the passion and the love of softball. Probably my fault, you know, dad pushing too hard. But my youngest one was a park rat, so she developed it. And then as soon as she turned 10, we tried out for the Heartland team and kind of sprung from there.
So you brought up when you were growing up. Why do you think it is if you drive, well, we're talking to you, recording this on a Wednesday, 4th of July week. Is that Triangle Field in Silvis that's still there or not?
Yeah, and they just redid it.
Okay, so
it's really
so,
cool.
So we're talking to you on Wednesday. I bet nobody's doing what you were doing when you were a kid. Out there.
No.
So why do you think do you think it's just because we've been conditioned now to everything is so ultra organized?
And I think it's the digital age. I think it's so much easier to get that same rush playing a video game, playing Home Run Derby on the whatever Nintendo or whatever y'all have now. I don't know, on the Wii. I don't even know if they are. I don't even know. I think that's what it is. Unfortunately, we're not getting kids out enough and getting them away from their electronics. I would love to. Matter of fact, there have been a couple times where just driving home from a practice, you know, I'd drive past Friendship Park or something, and you'd see some kids just out there hitting, and you'd be like, man, where's everybody at?
Yeah.
I know there are kids here.
Yeah.
You know, get out there and fill that diamond.
All right. So when we look at like family. So you brought up your wife mm-hmm. involved, and I know she missed a game, and you brought her up listening. She's a nurse, right?
Yeah.
And then I know, is it your youngest daughter that had some health issues, mm-hmm. but is on the mend now? She's involved a little bit in coaching or helps you coach things
yes.
of that nature.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, there is this buy-in that you have to have from your family if you want to do stuff like this.
Oh, absolutely. Top to bottom. My oldest works at University of Wisconsin, and she'll come, same thing, she'll come home for the playoffs and be supportive. Softball's not her thing. You know, I probably talk about it too much, and I turn her off a little bit, but Avery is, she's dialed in, man, and same thing with Jennifer. My wife and Avery may be the two most competitive people I know. I mean, I can recall, you know, when we were in the playoffs, I think it might have been 2016 when Daria hit the walk-off in the Super
yeah,
Sectional.
260, yeah, 260.
Yeah. Oh, and I know there was some heated exchanges between the fans and that could be attributed to the competitiveness of those uh-huh. two. I mean, I don't want to be in the car with them after a loss. Because they'll be all over you, you know. Because they're the best backseat coaches on the planet. They'll tell you.
All right. So when we talk about doing this, and I always, you know, I've been doing it since 1990, covering high school sports, and I always look at the successful programs, and I look at kind of the big picture. You know, what's the equation that's in place? And for me, a lot of the foundation is the buck stops with the head coach. I get that. But it's easy to see the good programs with the people that are around the good programs, with the assistant coaches and the staff that you build. That's the one thing that it's, I don't know if you say it's easy to see, but I'm saying the staff is so important.
Yeah.
And coaches that figure that out are the coaches that really, I think they say, we don't rebuild, we reload. But I think a lot of it is no, you have the foundation.
Right.
And that cures a lot of the issues.
Right.
So you, did you get lucky assembling this staff, or how did you go about doing it? I know you give them a lot of credit,
too. I did get lucky, big time. And I know that when I was kind of being I don't know, recruited, I guess you would call it, to coach there. You know, Liz was right on board right away. She's like, I'm in if you're there. And Liz was one of my assistant coaches on the Havoc right after she graduated, actually even before she graduated Iowa. And I wanted to get Keith Bogner involved. So after I was hired, I talked to Keith, and he said, you know, I can't say yes or no until I sit down and have a talk with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to him, and I went through my program. I went through our rules. I went through what we're going to do to rebuild the culture. And he bought in right away. And Coach Graves, at the time, when I first started, she was there. But it really is, I didn't have to have a meeting with my coaching staff and say, hey, you guys have to back me. We have to be a united front. It was the other way around. They were like, we are, whatever you say, mm-hmm. we are buying into. If we disagree with something, we'll bring it up and we'll see, but this is your team. That is awesome. I don't have to have that, you know, push-pull with the coaches. It's all they're trying to help me as I try to help them, you know, and it's, we talk about servant leadership a lot in our program, and that's, I kind of use that as an example. You know, they're always, how can I help you? And I'm the same way. What can I do to help you? You know, so with that being said, when we have our first meeting with our parents, we get our parents to buy in because we have a set of rules. We have a set of expectations. And everybody, you know, for the most part, has really bought in and understood that we're pulling the rope together. This is a team thing, and we need everybody to know your role, you know, whether it's a coach, a parent, an administrator, who we have huge support from our administrators. They're absolutely awesome. But everybody does their part, and we're pulling the rope together. And I think that's a huge part of our success, especially in building the expectation of our softball program's culture.
Well, and I think it's interesting because, you know, you talk about Keith Bogner, you talk about Liz Furlong, Daphne Graves, and then Jim Garrett. I think he's stepping away, and a guy like Dana DeCarroll. Man, those are head coaches at some point.
They are, absolutely. Yep, and I've said this before, is how cool is it that I'm surrounding myself with coaches who are better coaches than I am? That is outstanding. So, I mean, Dana and Jimmy have been huge in bringing in Jimmy has an unbelievable knowledge of the game and an unbelievable approach at teaching the game. And same thing with Dana. Dana gets on a level, a mental and emotional level with these kids that there's no way I could do it. I mean, he can communicate with them, and when they're struggling, he does such a good job of helping them understand why they're struggling. And like I said, just he's on a level with them that is awesome. And you know, it's the same thing with you know, Daphne and Keith and Liz. Everybody does their part, and everybody kind of we try. I say we play to our strengths. You know, Liz was a you know, All-American Big Ten catcher, mm-hmm. you know. So, of course, she's dealing with catchers and pitchers. And same thing with Jimmy, but Jimmy kind of works more with outfielders. And with Dana's experience with the Firebirds and being a head coach who's won, I can't tell you how many state titles and, you know, developed a ton of D1 talent, you know, that's just priceless to have on our staff. And, you know, although Jimmy's leaving, we have these Wednesday night summer practices. Guess who shows up?
Yeah, good for him.
Mr. Jimmy Garrett.
Yeah. Well, and I know we talked to you about this, and Glenn Cook mentioned it a lot during the broadcast. And by the way, Glenn Cook, can you throw some shade on him? Because he'll say some critical things, and then, he'll say, I hope they don't interpret this the wrong way. So let him have it.
Yeah.
No, but we talk about, like, warming up. You know, that's the other thing when I see, like, successful programs, that the little things, those nuances, when you try to figure out, well, why is this team so successful every year? Well, watch what they do before the game. It's one thing to warm up, I tell people, and it's another thing to have a purpose when you warm up. And I see that with the organization of what Rock Ridge does, and I think a lot of that is attributed to you, and then I think your staff. And I tell people, and this is my belief, my oldest daughter played ASA softball, so I traveled the circuit for a good 6 years. I think softball in the Quad City area, out of all sports, and now a lot of people, this is Taylor speaking, and so
sure.
A lot of people are probably going to get mad at me. It's the most well-played fundamental sport in the area, that kids are taught primarily the right way. And you can see that when you go to a lot of these ASA diamonds. So I say it gets back to warming up purpose. And when you go to a lot of these ASA practices, when you see these coaches that do it the right way, it's constant repetition, mm-hmm. but it's being taught through the repetition, doing it the right way. It's just not hitting it over and over. It's teaching while you're doing it. Long story short, if you just understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you could have a million reps, but if you do a million reps wrong, you're going to end up being pretty terrible. But I think, the Quad Cities is a hotbed for softball. A lot of people don't get that. You see all these kids that are going to play college elsewhere. Why aren't they staying here? You know, there's three good softball programs at the collegiate level in the Quad Cities. I'd like to see them, as many of them stay here and take those teams to nationals. But in another reason why I think we're a hotbed is because the pioneers of Quad City softball, they did it right. The Dennis Shears, the Burnett Moody's, and Tim Cumberworths and Butch Warners, all those guys going way back, John Alonzo, Mark Gerlach, all those guys going way back, they were the ones doing it right and setting the tone. So a lot of credit needs to go to those guys. But within our own program, we stress doing the little things right. That was one of the things Coach Garrett brought in. Before every game, we talk. We have a huddle. We talk. I talk too much. The other coaches, say a word or two. And consistently every single game, Coach Garrett just simply says, play hard, play right, do the little things. Enough said, right? And we, to add to that, we'll repeat it a lot. If you're too big to do the little things, you're too little to do the big things. So when we do those pre-games, and we do them every day at practice too, it's not just at a game. What you see us do in a pre-game, we do every single practice, and we say it all the time. Do it right, do it right, do it right. I don't care how fast you can do it. I don't care how slow you can do it. Mechanically, do it right so you're training that muscle memory to do it right when it counts. You don't have to think about it. Same thing with hitting mechanics. Train yourself to do it right so in a game it's just see ball, hit ball. Relax and have fun. And that's what our pregame is about, is just dialing the muscle memory in, building the confidence. And that's another thing. When you do those little things right, now the mental part get strengthened as well. And so we're big on making sure that we're doing nothing but building confidence and recovering physically, mentally, and emotionally from every, a swing and a miss or an error or whatever. We're making sure that we have quick recoveries. One of the things that I talk about, even in the kids who started coming to our camps when we first had them, when I was first there, is we eliminated the word error. We eliminated the word mistake, and we changed it to gainer. And so what we tell the kids is from every little mistake, it's a learning moment. It's a teachable moment. So you've gained ability, knowledge, and then eventually confidence. So these are all gainers. So you understand it's a process, and you're supposed to make mistakes so that you can get better and gain ability.
Well, that's great. Yeah. You need a T-shirt made like that.
I guess.
You guys are probably have one of those. The other thing to back up, about programs that I see are you can tell that are successful. Okay. Now, and I think the definition is a little bit different from spring sports, because I think a lot of times spring sports are like on their own island,
Right.
Like where the coach is responsible for taking care of the field, basically baseball, softball, everywhere.
Sod father.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, and you can tell the programs that are in it, because I know. I'm like, we're going to play March. Well, I know there's only like three programs that really care enough about their facility to get it ready by March. Now, Rock Ridge is one of those facilities, and I think like every time there's a game scheduled on March 13th, you guys play some way, somehow. And a lot of schools in the area, maybe they're lucky to have their field ready by mid-April.
Yeah,
that takes the parents to say, hey, if you're in this and you're buying in and you want us to play in March and get those games in, you're going to have to get the shovel out and help us out.
Right, and that first week, we had 41 people on our field. We had people digging holes, pushing water, pumping water off our diamond, and it goes back to the word commitment. It's a black and white word. There's no in between. You're either, if you're sort of committed, then you're not committed. And our parents and our coaches and our players are fully committed. And I'll tell you what, man, we were out there freezing our tails off working on that field, but it was ready to go. Now we ended up getting a little more snow, so we got backed up a little bit more. But when it's time to go, it's time to go. And a huge part of that is Keith Bogner. We call him the sod father. That dude's on our field every day. I mean, he is on it, working it, leveling it, you know. We put in a new warning track. Needham's Excavating came in and donated a warning track to us. And we had some torrential downpours. And if you look at the grade of the campus, the high school's high, and the baseball field's a little lower. Well, the softball field's the lowest. So when we got a big torrential downpour, guess what? Our warning track ended up in the right field corner. It was all gone. So Needham's Excavating came in, and they built a new ditch, a new drainage ditch around the outside of our softball field so that water now drains away. And we got a lot more stuff we're going to do, too. We've got a big fundraiser coming up, a golf outing coming up next month, and we're going to use that proceeds we're going to completely skin off our outfield and grade it and get it ready to go and make it a better outfield. But I've told our kids since we came in that I want them to have the best. I want them to have the best uniforms, the best gear, number one, the best field, because I want them to all take part in the fundraising and working on it so that they take ownership in it and they care about it more and, you know, they have some pride in it. And I think to their credit, they've really done that. And, you know, if you look at our field, how it's decorated, how it's set up, we've got a batter's eye, we've got padded backstops, and, you know, it's decorated nicely because I want them to feel, when they walk on that field, I want them to feel like a professional softball player.
Yeah.
You know, like this is all, it's all been done for them so they could succeed.
All right. You know, it's interesting because I said, you know, talking about kids fundamentally playing softball, and I think in the Quad City area with the quality programs there are, you know, how many kids are taught the right way depending on what programs they're playing in. And it's easy for me to see when I'm broadcasting a lot of games. But, you know, the one criticism, though, I hear, too, sometimes, and I'm curious to see how you respond to this, is there's no question great talent, but then also sometimes there's this perceived talent. So, you know, from your position, where you have to finish, you know, fill out a lineup card 41 times a game or 41 times a year, whatever, and, you know, you're dealing with, maybe those, because I think sometimes in the position you're in, where you have maybe 15 kids or 16 kids that can play,
right?
You know that
and
can
we
play.
Do.
Yeah, I'm saying. And then those six kids that aren't in the lineup, they could play down the road somewhere and be a key contributor.
Yes.
But they're not in the lineup that day, or maybe a majority of the lineup, and sometimes they have to wait their turn or wait down the road. But then sometimes you deal with, well, my kid starts for this ASA team. Nelson, why ain't she starting for this team? You know, how are you able to deal with that delicate equation? And I think a lot of the times the way you deal with it is through the success your program has.
Yeah.
So that's got to be, though, a difficult, I won't say difficult, but I say a challenging dealing with that equation when you have only 9 kids or 10 kids that can play with a flex, but you have 17 kids that legitimately could be in that lineup. And maybe they ain't going to even get a bat or sniff an inning that day.
Yeah, or that season.
Yeah, so how tough is that? How do you deal with that?
It's tough, and you find those moments to make sure that you can get that kid in and to have a successful moment. But you have 15 or 16 or 17 talented kids. There are still best 9. You still have the best 9. You know what I mean? And
best 9, the other issue is best 9 freshman through senior.
Absolutely.
And that's the other issue.
The game does not know how old you
are. That's right.
The game does not know, and I don't care. I could care less. I've started a freshman every year since I've been a head coach out there. And the game doesn't matter. The game doesn't care. But, again, that goes into what we preach as far as being a selfless team, you know, team first player. We talked to our kids a lot about the anatomy of a teammate. There's a great video out on YouTube with that's called The Anatomy of a Teammate, and it's about Alabama softball. You know, a senior who, she's going up for her last college at bat, but she's a slapper and the bases are loaded. They sub her out for somebody else, and she turns around and instead of pouting, that's her last collegiate at bat. She's an All-American.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany Rogers was her name. She's on the top of the step cheering the loudest for that freshman that just got put in for her. And we show those kids that, and the kid ends up hitting a grand slam, of course. You know, Patrick Murphy's a genius. But you know, we talk to our kids a lot about being a selfless servant leader. And when you're asked to do a role, do it the best you can. Celebrate the girl next to you more than your own, successes. And there have been so many kids who've gone through our program and done that. Elena Martinez, you know, hardly played at all until her senior year, you know, and then didn't start in the playoffs her senior year, but was a great teammate, and we found times for her to get in there. And she never complained.
And I thought that senior class from 2018 was a perfect example of that. That core group, that senior group of 2018, including the Preston girl, mm-hmm. that maybe didn't play a lot as a junior, and then the Bisland girl who came back out, and Abby Redlinger, and I may be forgetting another one of those. They definitely didn't play primary roles the three previous years when they were freshmen, right. sophomores, and juniors, mm-hmm. but they waited.
Yeah,
and
they
got
waited
their turn and
they
lived
positive.
They lived the story.
Right, and they were positive, and they made sure that the dugout was a positive place with clean air and, you know, constantly high-fiving everybody, recovering people from failures and being great teammates. And that's just something they have to buy in. And when we have a kid who's not doing that, we have a talk, you know. I've been there 5 or 6 years. I've had one talk with one parent.
And that's good.
And that player didn't come back, you know, because they didn't buy into the culture. And that's the way it is, you know. But I just think that first and foremost, they have to understand we have a team goal. And that goal is to prepare ourselves, use the season to prepare ourselves for the playoffs when it counts. And every game is a step in the journey. And you learn. Coach DeCarroll's got a great saying that we use a lot, and that's you either win or you learn. And even when we win, we find things to fix at practice. Mm-hmm. You know, at that one practice a week you get during the season.
Yeah. The bottom line is you control what you control. I mean, it's up to the coach, the head coach, to determine what is allowed and what is not allowed. And I know when I do these long form interviews, I'll revert back to something. We were talking about youth sports, and I know there was a lot of attention recently. I can't remember, was it a 7-year-old game where the parents went absolutely bananas and there was a bench clearing brawl. Now you're more involved and in tune with youth sports out there. Give me a stat. Do you feel good about it? Is it getting worse? What are some of the things that your season, what you're seeing, is there hope or not hope? Are you worried?
I do think it's getting better, but, you know, just like anything, it always gets worse before it gets better. Unhappy parents, and the reason softball in the Quad Cities and around the state and Midwest is getting watered down is because you have parents with unrealistic expectations, and so they just go start their own team.
And that's not just softball.
No, yeah, I'm sure that's everything. That's
every youth sport now that you're seeing more and more. And travel baseball and travel softball, in my opinion, isn't as elite as it used to be, with the exception the top-level programs still are. But it's a watered-down version, and that's the criticism that people see, that it's team from team from team. You don't like this situation, you go start another team, and you're like, well, what's the name of this team now, or what are we doing? Weren't you playing on this team last year or even earlier this season?
Yeah, and I think if more people bought into let your child fail, it's okay. Let your child fail and understand that is a process. Failure is totally fine, especially in baseball and softball. It's a game of failure. You fail 7 out of 10 times, you're in a starting lineup, Joker. You know what I'm saying? So I think if people would relax, be patient, and understand it's a process, allow the coaches to coach and allow the kids to learn, fail, learn, and grow. I think it would be, you know, it'd be so much better and not worry about so much about the score. Shoot, when I started my current Havoc 05 team, they were 8s, and we didn't play 8 and under coach pitch. We went right to 10 under, and we just let them get, you know, land blasted by all these 10 and 11-year-old girls. But I told the parents, this is going to happen. Yeah. Expect it. But, you know, 8 state championships later, Yeah. You know, they're they're clicking.
And that's why, you know, in those type of situations, it starts from the top with the head coach. And I can use an example from travel softball. I'll never forget my daughter played 5 or 6 years for Rich LaFontaine, who's a legend of the Quad City Firebirds. And she played with Ashley Peters. And I'll never forget, we were at a this is one of my favorite stories. We were at a 10U tournament in Branson, Missouri.
Oh, the Nationals.
Yeah. And Ashley Peters, who pitches at Rock Island, is going to Purdue. Great kid. Deb Peters, the mother. And we were playing like a mid-afternoon game. It was 7,000 degrees in Branson, Missouri today. Yep. And we got stuck on the field where there's no shade.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, and Rich is on the bucket where he always sits on the bucket. And Ashley Peters is pitching, okay? And I'm kind of off, not necessarily right behind home plate, but, you know, maybe off to the left a little bit. And I'm like, this kid is getting squeezed today, you know? I'm like, Blue's got to do a better job. And I didn't go overboard like crazy saying anything, but I'm like, geez, you know, come on, Blue, you got to look at that a little closer. And I'll never forget. It was so great. So Rich LaFontaine, I always kid Deb Peters about that. He leans back on his bucket and he looks down at me and he goes, "Hey," in his voice, he's like,
"Oh yeah,
we don't do that here." And, you know, it's stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like the other thing is the foundation of these preseason meetings. And I'm not talking about just ASA softball, but the rules that you set out is one thing, but you have to follow them. So the first time a situation comes up, you have to back up to the rules and say, "Hey, we talked about this, and you know this, and everybody knows this, and you gotta live by it, and you can't sway away from it." Is what I'm saying. In those type of programs, like what I experienced in those days, it's like, "Oh, okay, if you're gonna behave this way, you're not gonna be a part of this."
Right, and that's the same thing for us. Our parents know you do not talk to umpires. You don't say a word to umpires. You know, and you don't talk to me either. I'm coaching your kids, not you. But yeah, and another thing we talk a lot about in our with both my travel team and my high school team is accountability. You know, you watch my high school team. We may win a game and run 5 poles after a game because we're gonna take accountability for those those strike threes looking, or we're not a big fan of backwards K's, or you know, if we don't hustle out a pop fly and end up on second base by the time they catch it, or things like that. You know, we want to make sure we're being accountable, because that makes you a better person. That actually brings forth better effort. And I just think it helps build a championship program top to bottom, inside the dugout and outside the dugout.
All right. And I wanted to mention too, I wanted to get away from softball a little bit here, but 6 years at Rock Ridge, 177 and 48 in state title, and two third place finishes for Rock Ridge. But you know, in terms of tunnel vision, when I talk to a lot of people, it's unfair to say their life is just about whatever, you know, for you, just about softball. I know you're much more than that, and I always laugh at people and the relationships I have, because I know a kid of the 80s. Right.
Oh yeah.
So I love the 80s connection I have with you, like baseball wise. And this year, I remember getting a soundbite from you after the game, and you said, "Well, it's the White Sox winning ugly." Yeah. Tony La Russa was the manager of that team in 1983. And the one year in 2018, I always said, "Man, you're swinging the bat like the 1982 Brewers without the beards."
Right. Yeah.
So. I mean, you like 80s baseball too.
Yeah,
you
dig 70s that. And 80s baseball.
Yeah. So you, I asked, were you like a This Week in Baseball fan?
Oh, I love Swib.
Can you hum the theme song or not? No.
No. But I love that. I love, you know, Johnny Bench's. What'd they call that back then?
The Backyard Bunch.
It was the Baseball Bunch.
The Baseball Bunch.
Bunch. Yeah, that was outstanding. And then, you know, is it Mel Ott that did This Week in Baseball?
Yeah, Mel Allen.
Mel Allen. Yeah. Mel Allen. That's right. Mel Allen. But that
Goodbye
was,
for now.
Yeah, you never miss that. You know, you never miss those Saturday. It was like 10 or 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings. you live for that, man. You know,
and that's the other thing. Well, that's why I'm saying the other thing that I feel bad for in today's environment, I can watch my team play every game. Or, you know, remember like back in the 70s or 80s, you had to wait for Tony Kubek and Joe Garagiola and say, man, they can have the Giants Astros on Saturday.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Same, I mean, God, yeah, and how lucky are we today where, you know, if they didn't have the blackout, we'd be able to watch the Cubs every single day. And I'm one of those weird guys who likes the Sox and the Cubs. My mom's side of the family was all Cubs fans, and you know, my dad's side had a lot of White Sox.
Are you
fans.
You a more White Sox fan than Cubs or not?
More
or
Cubs.
Are
more
you?
Cubs, yeah, but I mean, you know, shoot, for my wedding anniversary, one year my wife and I went to a Cubs game on a Sunday, and then Labor Day Monday we went to the White Sox game, and then we drove the next day to Milwaukee and watched the Cubs again.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, but how cool is that when we would get like a Monday night game, and then we would get, you know, a Saturday afternoon game, sometimes a Sunday night game, and sometimes
but
it was your
now,
team,
but
sometimes
yeah, but
it
now
wasn't.
Today that's it's so easy,
right.
You don't have the thrill of, you know, seeing that team for the first time.
Right. Yeah. Well, we had WGN for the Cubs.
Yeah.
So thank God for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
All right. So the other thing. I remember you, it was a couple years ago, it's always interesting when you talk with people, and I remember one time I was going to a White Sox game, and you texted me randomly and said, you need to go see, you know, this so-and-so stand at section whatever. What was that?
35th Street Tacos, behind section 135.
At Guaranteed Rate Field?
At Guaranteed Rate Field. They have the best carne asada tacos on the planet.
Well, you said they were, because you inferred back, you said they're something about as good as or better than Ice Cream Palace.
Ice Cream Palace and Silvers.
Which no longer, rest in peace, it no longer exists. So yeah, I dig stuff like that. So the other thing that I never really talked with you in depth about, now this is a perfect connection for Rock Ridge, because they have such a successful music program, and they're very proud of the tradition. So you play in a band,
mm-hmm.
a longtime band, right?
22 years.
Called 22 years.
Yeah, and this weekend, man, in Seneca, Illinois, we're having a reunion show with the original members.
So 22 years. How'd you get? So it's the same name, Cheese Pizza, or is it?
Yeah,
changed?
No, it's been the same.
Did you get involved in that? Were you a band kid in high school, or
you know what? I wasn't a band kid in high school. I wanted to be a rock star. And
they wouldn't let you do that at all.
Sorry, at Allman. No, yeah, there's no twirling the sticks and teasing your hair out in the 80s at Allman. So I was just in garage bands. Luckily, I had some really cool dudes that lived within a block away from me.
Did your dad say, turn it down, boy?
We had a light system going on in the house. So if I was, you know, they'd give me time, but when it was time for me to stop playing the drums, they would just open the door to the basement, flick the lights a couple times, and it was game over, man. But, you know, Jeff Ware, Todd Herbert, rest in peace. Those cats were over at my house. Brad Goring, and we would jam for hours, and you just, you know, kind of learn the ropes. I started that in high school, and then after high school I went to Western Illinois with my wife, and we went to college, and then I got a job, and I ended up staying here, and then I joined a local band, and from there things kind of spun, and ended up starting Cheese Pizza in 97, and that band just kind of blew up. I mean, we were playing shows with every 80s rock band you could imagine. I mean, you name an 80s rock band, we've probably played with them. You know, we ended up getting, shoot, I got a drum endorsement. I mean, things were doing really well, but then I wanted to start coaching, you know, and the two didn't work out so well, because, you know, getting home at 4 o'clock in the morning when you're playing a show 3 hours away, and then getting up for an 8 a.m. game, which means 6:45 warm-up.
Yeah.
That stuff got old, you know.
But you still do it sometimes,
still
though.
Still do it. I'll do it this week. I mean, we're running a state tournament.
See us in Seneca, Illinois.
Yeah, Seneca, Illinois, Saturday night. Cheese Pizza reunion tour. It's been a blast. And the days of playing 100 to 120 shows a year, those are long gone.
So how many times you play a year?
Maybe 20 now. It's awesome. It's just... very rarely do we play, and when we do, it's awesome. It's a great time. We just played in the district for their anniversary show in maybe early June, I think, in Rye Upper State.
We played
that one. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know if I have another show booked after this next one, and that's fine. I mean, I lived that life. I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, you know. But
have you played other instruments in addition to the drums, or it's been the drums it?
It's just been the drums. And I used to work at the Music Mart part time. I would work at the Phoenix program at the school where I work now, and then just after that, I would go work there. And just so many awesome musicians in the Quad Cities, and I got to meet them all, you know, working there and sell them guitar strings or sell them cymbals and sticks. It was outstanding. Some of the best people I know.
So Paul, do you know more about music equipment or baseball or softball bats?
I probably equal both. I could go on and on about music gear because I'm a little bit of a gearhead, but same thing about bats. Yeah.
So 22 years. How many shows have you been able to think about? How many shows in 22 years?
Oh, man.
So I mean, you're talking about initially you did 100 shows.
The first 10 to 12 years we were doing 100 shows at least a year. So that's 2,400 maybe. I don't know. You know. So
man.
Yeah. And everywhere. We were all over the place. And it was great. It was mostly within the six-hour radius.
Do you feel you could... I mean, you probably could write a book on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you know what my band is like, but...
So, like, the venues... Like, explain, like, the different... I tell you what. Give me the strangest, like, venue or strangest, like, place you ever had to play.
Got it. Pawpaw, Illinois.
Is that up north or no? Where's that at? Pawpaw, Illinois.
It's on your way to Chicago somewhere.
Yeah.
And then you head up towards Rockford, I think. Pawpaw, Illinois. We're playing a place, and we are literally, our stage was part of a bowling alley. And right next to us, there are people bowling as we're playing, and there may have been 15 people in it the whole night. And we were just, the whole time, we were dying laughing. Because we're used to playing packed rooms, selling out, you know, venues. And this was a place that, you know, our singer was like, hey, if we can get into this town, I think we can, you know, hit it every 8 weeks or whatever. Okay. Not so much. We that was a paid practice. We got out of there. But then some of the best are like Third Street Live in Cedar Rapids, where you have 1,500 people in the place.
Wow.
And there's a row, you know, a line down the block to get in. And we pull up in the limo, and you get out, and you're like, how do we get in? You know, it's...
What's the biggest gig you ever played doing that?
Maybe a show we did with Skid Row and Cinderella in...
No
Ottawa.
Kidding?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How, oh, man. So did you get to meet those?
Oh, yeah. I gave a drum lesson to Freddie... the drummer for Cinderella. I was warming up, and he came up behind me, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just doing this.
So you gotta meet some of the glam bands,
oh, yeah,
man.
We played
so,
with all
so
of them.
So have you ever seen the documentary? I've talked a lot of people about it. I'm a big documentary guy. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the documentary, The Decline of Western Civilization?
Oh, absolutely. Christopher Holmes in the pool?
Isn't? Oh yeah.
That's the best.
So did you see some of that then?
I've met Chris Holmes, yes.
So it's true?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is a fascinating documentary, watching those glam bands of the 70s or 80s or whatever, and see their meteoric rise to fame, and then their rapid descent.
We got kicked off stage by Great White.
Oh, no kidding.
Not a lot of people can say that.
Because for what reason?
We were playing with Great White, and the band... it might have been LA Guns that was also on the bill. And because at the time, their singer wasn't in the band. Jizzy Pearl, the singer from Love Hate, was in the band. He came out and he saw us doing our thing, and they thought we were upstaging them. We're just putting on our show. This is what we do every...
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? With all the costumes we have and all the pyro and the sideshow people we have got going on. And they literally... pulled the electrical plug. The production company.
It's like a Simpsons episode.
Oh, it was fantastic. It's one of my favorite memories.
So then, the interest though, that just bunch of dudes getting together. You just wanted to do it. I just said, let's get the band together. I got some interest in this, and we'll see what we can do.
So there were some guys that were in a band out of Chicago called Nikki Fox, and they toured with David Lee Roth. I mean, they were probably Chicago's biggest unknown, you know, right after Enough's Enough got signed, yeah. they were pretty big, and they were from around here, and they saw me, and their band was kind of breaking up at the time, but they wanted me to be the drummer, so I'll go be the drummer. They changed the name and changed the direction. It just wasn't working out, so we're like, why don't we just put together a band to just go out and make some money? You know, let's go just do a band where everybody knows every song, but we'll rock it up, and we will just go out there, and it'll be like the Rocky Horror Picture Show on stage, but we're a band. And so that's really what we're trying to pull off, just shock value. And we had that. People knew when to throw beer at us. They knew when to throw popcorn at us. They knew, you know, all that stuff. And it was just really just to go out there and be as obnoxious and entertaining as we could be.
Is it a true alt ego for you then or not?
Oh, yeah. Gil Fishman. That's my stage name. Everybody in the band has their own stage name and persona. I mean, you know, we have a cross-dressing singer who, if you know him in real life,
kinda like that.
He's not like that at all.
It's kind of like the Andy Kaufman character.
It's exactly. Yes. Yes. You're dead on.
And that's a 1980s reference. What was the Andy Kaufman alter
on Taxi?
Yeah. What was his alter ego when he would do these performances? It'd be like a lounge singer,
right?
That was really, was it Vic something? I can't remember.
No, it wasn't Vic.
Because
I
saw the movie, The Man in the Moon,
right. Yeah.
And there was always speculation that, well, this isn't Andy Kaufman, it's a different person. And then this person, after Andy Kaufman had died, came out and played
out. Yeah.
I
don't remember that guy's name, but you're right. Yeah, so, same kind of thing.
So the you look at different interests that people have in life. What's your, you know, when you look at the Rock Ridge kids, because I think this is a nice, like, segue. You see a lot of the kids that play softball for you are music kids or in chorus or band or whatever. So you can understand and dig that, how important that is.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So do they talk to you about that? And then when they don't realize, or they didn't realize, because it wasn't until like a couple years after you were coaching at Rock Ridge, and they're saying, have you ever heard about the Rock Ridge softball coach's band? I'm like, well, who are you talking about? The current coach? No, what are you talking? Yeah, the current coach plays in this band, and he's got this alt ego. I'm like, no, he doesn't. So, I mean, what is the, like, reaction you've got from...
I never bring it up.
I mean, do they bring it up to you and say, are you really that dude?
Okay, so last year we played at the Rock the Ridge event, which I think is coming up in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, next month sometime.
And that's a Booster Club fundraiser.
That's a Booster Club. I think maybe it's August 17th, I think. So I guess it's a little more than that, 3 or 4 weeks away. We played there, and that was the first year that they let under 21 people in, and the whole softball team was there. This was the year after we went state, and so they're all there, and they're in the front row throwing the horns, rocking out. It was a riot, and they all behaved themselves really well and really never said anything after that.
Mm-hmm.
They just like, oh, you're an entertainer. You know, it's just like being on stage in a theatrical production. It's just that we're playing instruments, you know, and they totally got it. And they actually knew some of the songs, you know, they knew some of the Bay City Roller songs and Kung Fu Fighting. They knew all the crazy stuff we do. So that was cool.
The Bay City Rollers, and they're probably like 85 now.
Oh gosh. I know. They gotta be up there. Hey, we went and saw my wife and, my oldest, child, Alex, for my birthday and Father's Day combined. Bought our family tickets to see Cheap Trick in Madison a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, because I remember you used that reference at one of our games we broadcast.
Well, that's because our first probably 10 or 15 years of Cheese Pizza, we wouldn't hire opening bands. We would open for ourselves as a totally different band.
Oh, wow.
Called the Swollen Swellingtons. We would open up for ourselves, and it would be 90 minutes of Cheap Trick. Just Cheap Trick.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
People loved
it. So you've put an immense amount of effort then in the costume and that stuff.
Sideshow. Yeah.
So that was a big part of when you organized this band, you wanted to, well, let's have
it's
this
identity.
It's
just not dudes in jeans and t-shirts playing. No, it's an...
It's a production.
It's a production. Exactly. There are parts to, and there's reasons why we do everything in the show and, you know, how we have the different medleys set up. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So then as we wrap up here, then it's great to see. And you know, I think the experience of what you say, well, how does it translate to what I do with coaching? To me, it proves that there's a lot of different people on planet Earth that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And to me, those type of examples, I think, apply here.
Yeah.
You know, being able to maybe get out of your element a little bit.
Yeah, and be well-rounded.
And be uncomfortable in some things, too. And
yeah, we talk to the kids a lot about that, too. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, and that's okay. That broadens your horizons. It makes you a more well-rounded person, you know. And it is cool that we have band geeks in the softball program, because they're outstanding kids. Our band kids might be some of our smartest kids in the program, too. And we get to have fun with it. Like Leah Kendall, you've seen Leah Kendall.
Yeah, that's my favorite tuba player of all time.
Exactly. She weighs 90 pounds soaking wet, and she plays the tuba. You know, that is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, because I even brought Glenn Cook almost to his knees to say, hey, you know what instrument she plays? And he's like, what? I said the tuba, and he's like, no, she doesn't. And I'm like, yeah, she plays the tuba. But I think the other thing is, too, you know, we talk about the success of programs, and successful programs have high character kids. Mm-hmm. They're good students. They're involved in other activities. And you can't take that for granted, but it's the expectation. And I think a lot of people now, especially when I talk to kids that are being recruited at the D3 level or D2 level, you know, you don't see a lot of D1 kids all the time in small schools.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about recruiting whatever sport you want to play, coaches ain't going to mess with kids that can't behave in the classroom or don't get good grades.
Amen to
that. And if you don't have that figured out, you're not going to play at the high school level either at the good programs, because it's about being good citizens too.
Yeah.
And at the good programs have the good kids where you talk, we have 17 or 18 kids that probably can fit this lineup. So you better take care of the other stuff that's more important than playing softball.
Amen. Our team GPA is 3.89. Okay, and that's freshmen through seniors, 3.89. And that's with kids doing FFA. That's with kids doing band. That's with kids playing 2 and 3 sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's with kids doing competitive cheerleading. They're doing it all, you know. They're doing it all. They're taking care of the classroom first and foremost. They're making sure they're committed to their sports, and they're being great teammates. So I'm the lucky one. I'm the one who gets to sit back and go, God, they make me look good. And all I'm doing is trying to coach softball. But these kids are just champions inside and out. I'm so blessed to be there.
All right. Well, man, it's been a fun 6 years, I'll tell you that. So yeah. I'll be looking forward to 2020. We'll be here before you know it for IHSA High School Softball. Congratulations on another great year and great program. Always a pleasure working with you guys over there, too. So keep it rolling.
Thanks. We really appreciate you being there for us.
All right, John Nelson, man. That's fun. Cheese pizza, man. We learned more about that today than anything. That'll wrap it up on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.